of Richmond against Shibana.
May it please the court, my name is Mitch Moser and I represent the appellant Michael Richmond in this case. At issue is whether the district court erred in dismissing the Section 2241 habeas action for failure to exhaust administrative remedies without applying the common law exceptions to exhaustion of ability, futility, and prejudice. Because this case falls squarely within any three of these exceptions to exhaustion, this court should address the merits and remand this case back to the district court with directions to grant the writ of habeas corpus. The first issue is whether this is a properly pled habeas action under Section 2241. Statutory exhaustion under the PLRA does not apply to habeas actions that are properly pled under Section 2241. And at issue specifically is the litmus test or the continuum between cases that address the fact or duration of confinement on one side and cases that just simply address prison conditions.
Well, unfortunately, that's the way the parties have briefed this, but I wonder whether that's correct, because you're not claiming that Richmond has a present right to be in a halfway house. What he's claiming is a right to the exercise of discretion without regard to the Office of Legal Counsel's opinion. And that makes this case sound very much like a series of parole release cases that we have had, where the claim is not a present right to be on parole, which everybody agrees is different from being in jail, but the claim is a right to consideration for parole under a different set of regulations or statutes. And we have held that that kind of claim, the claim to consideration as opposed to a claim for immediate release, is one that's properly brought under 1983 or in federal cases under the Administrative Procedure Act. So my question to you is, why isn't this just like the claim of somebody who says, I may not be legally entitled to parole, but I'm entitled to consideration under a different set of rules?
Throughout the pendency of this case, and it's been rather short, we've gone inside of and outside of different venues on that. This case began with two petitioners and then appellants, Mr. Lippold and Mr. Richmond. When filed, both of them were, as you suggested, before the current right to being transferred. During the case, Mr. Lippold passed his six-month date, June 19, 2004. At that point, arguably, the case transferred into one where he did have the immediate right to be transferred. We're past that point now because not only did he pass the six-month date, but he passed his 10% date and had the ability to be transferred to the CCC, and at that point gave up his appeal rights. So now, as you stated, we have the current situation of Mr. Richmond only, who again still has time until his six-month date, which would occur in 2 months. With that said, and
even when he reaches 6 months, he doesn't have a legal entitlement. On your view, he has an entitlement to be considered, not an entitlement to be put in a halfway house.
Well, that
your whole argument is based on a statute that you say gives the Bureau of Prisons discretion. No statute here that compels the Bureau of Prisons to release anybody.
That's true. That's correct. Although that decision has to be made before the six-month date or before the 10% date for it to have impact. And here, the decision has been made that his 10% release date, Mr. Richmond's, is February 3rd, 2005. So I believe we're past that point, and we are to the issue where the issue has been decided. If it hasn't been decided, it's been de facto decided that there will not be a six-month period, and that there will only be
I still don't understand how this copes with my question. Now, maybe this is sufficiently out of left field for the two of you that you ought to have some opportunity to file supplemental memoranda on it. So I will, if the two of you want, I will give you a week to file a post-argument memorandum on the question whether this is properly a 2241 action, given the fact that there's no claim of legal entitlement to transfer to a halfway house, but only a claim of entitlement to consideration under a different set of rules. And the two of you will want to take a look at how we have treated parole release decisions for purposes of the difference between habeas corpus and civil litigation.
May I clear up something? Simultaneous positions in 1 week, am I
right.
correct?
Exactly. Simultaneously.
That is.
Would you like me to continue?
Please.
Okay.
This is your crack.
This is my crack. Pending what is decided on that future briefing, if this court should decide that it wants to analyze this case as a properly pled 2241 or is not, which is how I think every other case to date in the district courts in the single case in the circuit court has decided it. Again, our position is still that this is a properly pled Section 2241 action, and therefore the statutory PLA exhaustion requirements do not apply at that point. And we cited in our case law the recent district court cases in Hendershot and in Monahan. We cited to dicta in Supreme Court cases and in other circuit court cases, and I won't review those issues here. But once we get past the issue of this is an action outside of statutory exhaustion, then we review the common law exhaustion principles. And there, under any of the three exceptions, there are four, we're identifying three. Under either ability or futility or prejudice, it's our position that exhaustion should not be required of Mr. Richmond because it would simply render his action moot. Under the ability issue, there is no ability for the agency, for the BOP, to grant any relief beyond 10% of the term here. There is case law cited by the appellee that says, well, just because you think you're going to lose, you still need to exhaust. And there's cases that go a little further that say, even if you're pretty sure you're going to lose, you still need to exhaust. This is a case separate from those. This is a case beyond those issues. Because here, it is clear that there can be no decision by the BOP to grant any time at the CCC beyond the last 10 months of the sentence, because the DOJ memorandum disallows that. And if there had been any exceptions to that policy since December of 2002, I suspect we would have heard of that from the appellee. Here, there is absolutely no ability to grant any relief other than the 10%, and therefore the agency doesn't have the ability to make this decision. A similar argument is made on futility, resorting to the administrative.
Do you think, by the way, that there would be any problem with the Department of Justice saying, well, the Assistant Attorney General for Legal Counsel thinks that we do not have discretion under this statute to release earlier than 10%. But if that were wrong, and if we did have that discretion, we would exercise our discretion not to release earlier than 10%.
I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that were...
That's a Lopez against Davis question.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that were the result specifically in this case. But here the...
I'm thinking systemically, right? They issue a policy statement after the Attorney General's opinion, or maybe after they get a copy of the First Circuit's opinion that you have drawn to our attention in Goldings. Right? They issue a policy statement after Goldings saying, you know, even if Goldings is right and we have discretion under 3621B, we're just not going to exercise it before the last 10% of a sentence.
I think,
would there be any problem, do you think?
I think if it were systematically, then I think it would be akin exactly to the situation we have now where it is the BOP policy. If they were to treat...
Do you think it would be identical to what we now have? And don't you have problems with Lopez against Davis where that's exactly what happened?
Again, I think the distinction is between whether they would approach it systematically or whether they would approach it
individually. No, in Lopez it was approached systemically, right? The department says we're not going to give people a year off with special treatment for drugs. And after a court says, well, you know, you can't just rule it out, they issue a policy statement saying, as a matter of our discretion, we're just never going to give that treatment in early release to people. Just never. We've decided not to do it. And the Supreme Court in Lopez against Davis held that that policy statement was valid, that they could systemically decide, as a matter of discretion, not to give prisoners a break.
I think that's an issue that would have to be addressed after this issue is resolved, and then the BOP would take that, what I would consider egregious position. But at this point, I don't think Lopez comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Moser. Mr. Dowell.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Mullen Dowdle. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney for the Western District of Wisconsin.
Oh, and by the way, Mr. Moser, since we took up a lot of your time with an issue that's going to be in a supplemental memo and which Mr. Dowell isn't going to discuss, I'll give you an extra 2 minutes for rebuttal, even though your time has run out. So you can plan on that.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, the district court properly dismissed this case for failure to exhaust. This is not a properly pled 2241 matter. The Supreme Court has made clear in Booth and Porter that a habeas petition not subject to the exhaustion requirements, only where the petitioner challenges the fact or duration of the petitioner's confinement. Not the case here. Mr. Richmond is not challenging the fact nor duration of his confinement. He is merely challenging the location of his confinement. And in our brief, we discussed that.
Well, as you know from my conversation with Mr. Moser, I wonder whether he's challenging even that. Right? He's not claiming a right to go to a halfway house now. He's claiming a right to reconsideration under a different set of criteria. And that's the question that the two of you will need to address in supplemental briefs. But it's different from the way that your brief formulates this issue.
I agree, Your Honor. You're correct. I think it highlights, though, why this is not a factor duration case, which then can get around the PLRA's mandatory exhaustion requirements. And we will file a supplemental brief on that matter, but I think that it just goes to show that, again, this is not a factor duration matter, and so you don't get into the Gonzales approach, which is what Mr. Richmond is arguing, that this court should apply Gonzales waiver-type analysis. Even if the court gets to the issue, it's Graham's quantum change analysis which applies, and here there is not the type of quantum change from, remember, Mr. Richmond wants to go from a prison camp to a halfway house. And that is not the type of change that this court has determined would be sufficient to be a quantum change. His remedy is a Bivens action. If the court goes...
Bivens action? Why is why isn't the right remedy a suit under the Administrative Procedure Act?
He could do that also, Your Honor. He could, but...
He could bring an APA suit, then he cannot bring a Bivens action.
Correct.
Because the Supreme Court has been very clear about that.
That's correct.
So what in the view of the Department of Justice is the right action? Is it an action under the APA, or is it an action under Bivens?
He could bring an APA action, Your Honor.
All right. Then he can't bring a Bivens action.
Right. But he would be required to exhaust his administrative remedies before doing so. As we argued in our brief, even under the Gonzales actions, even if this court gets to a Gonzales-type analysis...
Now why, in your view, was Lopez against Davis brought as a 2241 action? It wasn't discussed. Supreme Court resolves Lopez against Davis on the merits, but it was, in fact, brought as a 2241 action. And on your view, that was wrong in Lopez.
I'm not certain why it was brought as a 2241, Your Honor, nor whether those arguments were ever...
Or whether the department or why the department failed to contest it.
That's correct. And frankly, Your Honor, in some of these other cases which have been cited, the department has not consistently argued waiver in these halfway.
Goldings also was a 2241 proceeding. Was the propriety of that contested in Goldings?
In Goldings, Your Honor, they had exhausted his administrative remedies in the first
circuit. That's a different question from whether it is properly a 2241 proceeding. Right?
I don't.
Was it contested?
No.
And we have another one of these pending in the Ninth Circuit. Was that brought as a civil action or a 2241 proceeding?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay.
In any event, Mr. Richmond asked this court to waive an exhaustion requirement. If the court gets to it, argued the prejudice here was created by Mr. Richmond waiting for 15 months in which to file an action, any action. The record is clear that in December of 2002, he knew about the change in BOP policy, and he did nothing until he filed this matter with the district court. There's also no futility. We don't even know on this record whether Mr. Richmond would ever be entitled to a halfway house placement under any circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Richmond...
Okay. One would think that would be the strongest argument for exhaustion, that the administrative process might say, completely independent of the Office of Legal Counsel's opinion, you're not going to get this placement. And then the Goldings issue that's being argued to us as an alternative would vanish, would never need to be reached.
That's true, Your Honor. There is no evidence in the record as to whether or not Mr. Richmond would ever be eligible for halfway house placement. And so, again, it suggests that even under Gonzalez, and even Booth talks about exhaustion is a procedural mechanism to create an administrative record so courts can review that. You don't even know if you have the 3624C issue properly before you, because we don't know why the BOP would not send Mr. Richmond to a halfway house. In fact, they haven't even made that determination. In sum, Your Honors, the district court properly dismissed this action. Mr. Richmond was required to exhaust his administrative remedies, and as we've argued in our brief in detail, the BOP's interpretation of 3624C is a permissible interpretation. And Your Honor, finally, I want to mention, in candor to the court, there has been submitted a new rule categorically changing the halfway house placement. It's for notice and comment right now, and it's very much in line with the court's question. That's at 69 Federal Register 51213, August 19th, 2004.
69 Federal Register 51213.
Yes, sir. August 19th, 2004, mm-hmm. For notice and comment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Dowell. Mr. Melzer.
Thank you, Your Honor, for this opportunity. I'm piqued by your suggestion that the strongest argument for the BOP could be that that Mr. Richmond could go through his administrative processes and get some sort of worse treatment or different treatment in terms of placement. And I think the question here is whether he is entitled or has the possibility under either ability or futility of getting the relief that he has requested, any sort of decision besides a 10% placement. And I think that is where the exhaustion issues address that specific point. And I don't have any other comments, but I'll be happy to answer any other questions that we didn't have time for the first time around.
Mm-hmm. It looks like we're done, except obviously for the issue on which we invited memos simultaneous within 7 days.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moser. Thank you, Mr. Dowell. The case is taken under advisement.